Podcasting 2.0 for March 20th, 2026, episode 254, Papa Terme. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Podcasting 2.0. This is the only official place of something about podcasting, but it's us, and we're here. We've got an entire boardroom full with the misfits from podcastindex.social. We are, in fact, the only boardroom that didn't win an Academy Award or a Razzie, for that matter. I'm Adam Curry, here in the heart of the Texas Hill Country and in Alabama, the man who wants you to contribute your disk space for the good of mankind. Say hello to my friend on the other end, the one, the only, the pod sage, Mr. Dave Jones.
Oh, man. I just, while you were doing the intro, I realized I needed a knife to cut my cheese. And I was like, okay, I've got time.
Cut
so
the
I
cheese,
ran in the
man.
Kitchen. Yeah. I ran in the kitchen, yeah. Grabbed the knife,
yeah.
Got back to the podcast room. It was like, crap, I need a drink. So I ran back to the kitchen again, sat down right in time to hit the post.
Wow, you are amazing.
No, I'm just hungry.
Yeah, you had a little bit of traffic on the way home.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
See, is Eric PP in the boardroom? Is Eric PP in the boardroom? Is Eric PP in the boardroom? Paging Eric PP.
I don't see him. You're safe to talk about AI. Go.
Yes, yes. Thank you. Let me just make sure. All right. Yeah, safe. Okay. Adam's Adam's AI vibe coding corner.
If Eric comes in, just somebody give like blink twice and we'll know to shut up.
So, you know, I installed Omarchi, right? Which is Arch based Linux with the Hyperland tile manager. And I have been loving this operating system, loving it. I use all the workspaces. I've got all the keyboard commands down. Thing is rock solid. You know, I built a whole playout system for it. And what had happened a couple of times, you know, I was popping open a terminal window or something, show title right off the bat. Hold on a second.
Popping a termy.
Woo! That sounds almost sexual.
That's why it's so good.
Popping. Is it termy with a Y? Is it termy with a
T? It's got to be T T E R M Y.
Popping a termy. So. So I popped the termy and I saw this thing come up from, and I just like, you know, super key W, get rid of it. Cause I don't know what this is. There's all kinds of stuff. You know, there's separate editors that open the terminal. And so I'm kind of learning my way around. And so the other day, like 3 days ago, I popped the termy. I'm like, open code. What is this?
Oh, you have not used open code before.
Holy moly, guacamole, where has this been all my vibe coding life? This is...
I thought you had been using the Gemini CLI, though.
No, I was just copying and pasting into the browser.
I've been telling you for weeks.
I know what you've been telling me, but you didn't tell me about open code. So okay. I'm like, well, this is interesting. And kind of... coincidentally, at the same time, my guy who had sent me the Vulkan card and the Raspberry Pi, he says, here's a config. If you know, he got me the new models, the Qwen 3.5 and the coding models. Now you can hook this up to open code. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. So I did that later, but I started off with open code with their free as in free beer, Zen models. Oh my Lord. This thing has changed my life.
I told you it is when you make the switch to CLI, it's a game changer.
You know, because now it's doing stuff and I'm actually learning code now, because now I'm seeing it's doing diffs and it's, you know, the explanation, you know, it's not hidden like in a browser. It's going by. It's a little grayer color so you can read along. I'm seeing I'm seeing what it's looking at. You know, you can just say like, all right, this curry caster I've built, we need to get it on GitHub. Boom. Read me. Yeah. I need to document the features. Version it. I mean,
Screw Open Claw. Open Claw is pathetic. This is the system. I would pay these guys $100 a month. I'd cancel everything. This is, and what's beautiful about it is you can, because it has access to the computer you're running it on, you can say, you know, I don't like the way this computer works. Hey, Open Code, do this. And it does it. And it's like, huh? It's fantastic.
Well, what? Just take, if you want to pay somebody $100 a month, just go pay Claude $100 a month and you'll get that times 10.
No.
I'm talking about intelligence.
No. Because Claude is they're all token munchers. They're all token munchers. I've learned a lot about context windows and all this stuff. It's token munch. If you're doing what I'm doing, it's just token munching.
$100 a month is unlimited, though.
No, bull crap.
It is. I've never. It's effectively unlimited for the level of use that a human being alone just prompting can hit it with.
Well, I like these guys. I like it that they're open source. That's what I like about it. Mm-hmm. That's I want to support these guys, and it just solidifies for me the entire thinking that this stuff is going decentralized. The whole idea of getting all your models from one big cloud provider, that's going to end. That's what I love about this. These guys, you know, I don't know what they're running, how they're running it, but I'd rather pay them. It's open source. No sneaky stuff that's going on. You know, that's
so you're using the Zen model. You're not using local, right?
I have used the local, but
it's not as hard.
Yeah. Well, no, the context window is small because I only have, 24 gigs or something. So by the time everything's loaded, the context window is just too small. Yeah. But here's what I did just today. So I'd forked off that Rodecaster, what is it called? The pipe wire routing.
Mm-hmm.
So that I could, get the Rodecaster, all three interfaces working on Linux. And mm-hmm. And it took me quite a while to just get that done. And the problem I was having is that it decided to name stuff, but it was all wrong. So I was always sitting here. So for the clean feed, I don't want to use USB 1 chat. I want to use USB 1 main, and USB chat is actually something else. And so I just told my little Open Code buddy, I said, hey, hey, take a look at these config files. Just go look at the stuff I'm using and rename them. Done. Okay. Put it on the repo. Let everybody know. I put the Currycaster on the repo. He's got his own repo. I published.
Oh, where is it? Do drop, please. Please drop a link.
No, let me drop a link. I have my own repo, you see. I have a repo.
I knew you would.
I've had a repo for a while. Hold on. Where my repo at? Hold on a second.
Adam.
It's $199.
Adam C. 199.
No, 199 is a mistake I made a long time ago.
That's obfuscation.
I forgot a nine.
Yeah, security through obscurity.
Yes, exactly.
Rodecaster Pro 2 Pipewire.
Yeah, but then underneath there, Currycaster. Currycaster. Yes, this is what we're running on right now. Yeah. Look at those features.
Now, is this the... it is, Currycaster.
Yeah.
Boost!
It's what we're running on right now, baby.
So is this... Were the problems you're talking about that you were able to fix with Open Code Buddy, were those...
that was with Pipewire.
Is that the reason that sometimes your rig would just fire off something at random?
No, that's like static electricity or something that the MIDI is being MIDI was being triggered. It was one player, but it's just this because I got to play this for you. This is funny for a number of reasons. One, it's Kramer on CNBC. So inverse Kramer in effect.
Inverse Kramer.
Yes. Two, now we know that NVIDIA purchased or acqui-hired OpenClaw.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And they released a bunch of tools this past week.
Yeah, Nemo Claw and all this stuff. So listen to this conversation, because I think we're at peak AI hype at this point, where this bull crap is being spouted.
Another game changer that we didn't talk enough about, OpenClaw. I mean, OpenClaw is something that sounds like a force multiplier bigger than we've ever had.
It was open sourced just recently, a few weeks ago.
No. It's been open source forever. So, wrong.
It is now the largest, most popular, the most successful open source project in the history of humanity.
Well, this is bullcrap. How about Linux? I'm sorry, GNU Linux.
It's got more stars than other open source things on GitHub, but that doesn't mean it's the most popular.
In planetary history, I tell you. Yeah, so bullcrap.
Most popular, the most successful open source project in the history of humanity.
Well, this is the history of humanity.
Wow, all the way back to Jesus.
ChatGPT, when you told me in November it would be big, and then it turned up being January. This could be the next thing.
This is definitely the next ChatGPT.
Well, then why the hell aren't people talking?
Well,
about?
There are phenomenons of OpenClaw all over the world as we speak.
Tell people how you use it. You used to just say, I'm going to ChatGPT.
In one line of code, you could get yourself, I would you know, get a small computer. We have one that's called DGX Spark. You could also set it up in the cloud. In one line of code, you could create for yourself your own agent. And you could then, after that, just...
Yeah, in one line of code, you can create a complete security nightmare for yourself on the cloud. It's great.
Ask the agent to do whatever you want it to ask it.
Can the agent be a lot smarter than us?
We're still quite smart.
Well, can we ask the agent to build us a heart?
Okay. All right. Oh my there gosh. We are. Can we ask the agent to build us a heart? Oh, well, let's see.
We're still quite smart.
Well, can we ask the agent to build us a heart so that we don't have to use human transplants? It can build us a heart that is artificial so that we get away from the idea.
This is an analyst on CNBC who is so bought into this hype.
I thought he was kidding. He's for real.
No, he means this stuff, man. He means it.
So that we don't have to use human transplants. It can build us a heart that is artificial so that we get away from the idea.
I would have it do all kinds of mundane stuff first. Like, okay. For example.
Yeah, because
this is the guy trying to roll it back now.
Easy with your open heart surgery. I think we should have it do some mundane tasks first. Oh, but let's see, what kind of mundane tasks can it do?
Some mundane stuff first. Like, okay. For example, you know, design me a kitchen.
Design me a kitchen!
this guy's getting real uncomfortable. He's like, wait, let's pull it back from the heart surgery. And let's just do a kitchen first.
Let's see. Now listen to the kitchen build.
Okay.
You know, here's a picture of my current kitchen. Here's a picture of a kitchen I would love to have. Now, I would like you to go off and design that kitchen and select furniture to put in it. They'll go off and learn how to design a kitchen, use 3D tools, and actually read manuals. You can just watch it.
It'll read manuals, the build a kitchen manual. Yes, it'll type in the terminal, man, build kitchen.
You know, reading manuals, trying new things, and it'll come back with a design, and it'll reflect on it. It'll say, hey, this design that I came up with isn't as good as the one that you showed me a picture of. Let me try again.
Yeah. Imagine that with your heart. Hey, this heart that I made isn't so good. It's not working so well. Let me go back and try that again.
Okay, so let's deal with the company that's laying people off.
Every carpenter could now be an architect.
Whoa! Every carpenter can now be an architect. Yeah, because it is.
Every plumber will become an architect.
Every plumber can become an architect. Everybody, you're an architect, and you're an architect, and you're an architect.
We're going to elevate the capability of every...
Why are companies laying off people, saying that, you know what, NVIDIA is giving us the opportunity to do more with less. Why not do more with more?
Because you're out of...
Why not? What?
What logic is this?
Why not do more with more, I tell you?
You know what? NVIDIA is giving us the opportunity to do more with less. Why not do more with more?
Because you're out of imagination.
You're out of imagination, Kramer.
For companies with imagination, you will do more with less.
Yes.
For companies that are, you know, when the leadership just out of ideas, they have nothing else to do. They have no reason.
You need to buy more creation tokens. creativity tokens or whatever. Like, you're out of ideas.
I heard that.
These people are not real. Give me a break. I'm sorry. Look, it's like the response from Open Code is from Nemo Clause. Like, oops, I made a bug. There's a bug in your heart. Let's make a pull request and push it to the repo.
Let's open a discussion. About your heart not
working.
Would
you like me to patch it? Give me a break. These people are stupid, man. This is so bad.
So that said, to me, the revolution that I have, it's just taking me a year and a half, Dave. You know, starting back with, what was I, Mangus and all these other things I was trying.
Now, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. So
do they exist anymore?
I think they got acqui-hired or something. I don't know. Okay, I have to check all my subscriptions. I'm sure I'm paying $20 to at least 100 companies.
Probably.
But this, in combination with a little bit of knowledge of your own machine, this is the game changer. The productivity that is giving me to make my tool, my main tool, which is my computer. You know, it's not just a dumb box and I have to live within the confines of Windows. I can have anything I want. So I can do more with more. I can imagine. But what happens is, so today I went through this process of, okay, what is the stuff that's really bugging me that I just can't figure out, or it's going to take me too long, or I have to set aside too much time. And it was the renaming of the Rodecaster pipe wire interfaces. Another one that's been bugging me for a long, we have this thing called Godcaster Live. And Godcaster Live lets you spin up a 24/7 stream from the most recent episodes from podcasts that you choose. And it's pretty cool. You can insert station IDs in between and, you know, all kinds of different stuff. And it just runs. So whenever it sees in the list that a new episode is dropped from one of those podcasts, it schedules it next. So it's always kind of fresh. It's a great way to dip your toe into some of the podcasts that this Godcast station is providing. And so we have about 42 of them running right now. And I'm running on a 8 GB Linode server. And, you know, I knew it wasn't efficient because it's doing a lot of things. It's spinning up FFmpeg streams, which is really the biggest part. You know, it's doing to make these podcasts kind of flow. It's doing some in-stream FFmpeg processing in-stream. It's talking to the API at very frequent interval in order.
You're doing crossfades and stuff too, right?
Like 0.5 second, just real quick, one to the next, certainly with the station. It's processing power. And I'm just seeing, I can see it, you know, how do I scale this thing to, you know, 400 streams on one box? Spoiler alert, that'll never happen on this box. But I said, you know, because I just said, okay, go check this out. It SSHs right into the machine. You know, I gave, because it's just using my local machine, so SSH, and you have it in plan mode, so it's not going to build anything. It goes in, it understands the system just by looking at log files. You can see all that, everything that's doing. It's faster than I can do it, for sure.
And so, yeah, okay, it's in plan mode, but still, tell me, even in plan mode, schman mode, like, your butt draws up in a knot, right? When SSH is into your server and you're like, oh my God, what is it going to do?
No.
Yeah, well, I would be so nervous. I would be so nervous. Well,
I mean, before I did this, I made a snapshot of the server, obviously.
Okay.
I'm not a total idiot. I've been around. So if anything happens, I can always roll back to a snapshot. And so I felt pretty comfortable. And maybe 30 minutes of work and, you know, interactive, and, you know, it's asking me questions and I'm like, okay, and it says, well, here's the thing we can do. We can put eight streams into one FFmpeg process instead of having eight separate ones. And you can have slots. I mean, stuff I didn't even know you could do. And the reduction in server load is 80%.
I'm like, oh, wow.
Yes.
That's great.
Yes. I'm like, this is phenomenal. So that kind of stuff.
Now, the reduction in server load was 80% from what you had. But the real question is, how does it scale up? What is the scaling load now? So as you go from what you are now, do you have how much more efficient is each stream?
It's effectively okay. So because the biggest overhead is FFmpeg. So when you're taking 8 FFmpeg streams and bundling that into one FFmpeg stream, there's your 8-fold reduction in essence. So I could scale this box up probably 4 to 5 times, I'm thinking.
So you could get maybe 300 streams.
Yeah,
out of it?
Yeah, somewhere. Yeah, okay. 250 to 300. Okay. That in 30 minutes, I've had on my list for months, optimize code.
yeah. I've got a few of those where some vague thing.
Streamline channel stream code. I'm like,
I'm there. I feel you.
So, that to me is a 100% revolution. And I hope when people see the Currycaster, that they enjoy it, that they use it, that they improve on it, that they can use it for their pod. It's one big Python script, not even that big. And it just works.
That's your trademark. That's your signature programming style. One gigantic program Python script.
Yeah. That's my vibe, man.
Yeah. It's my brand. One day you're going to have your own OS and it's just going to be one. It's going to be 1-2 million line Python script.
I did say, for the Godcaster. So I say, hey, which is also, well, it's a couple of different scripts because you got an API script and you've got, but the main script runs per player. It runs it as a system service. There's a lot of smart, I think personally smart stuff in there. And I did say, hey, what would it take to refactor that whole thing?
Split this up a little bit.
Yeah. And it says, we could do this, could do that. But it really came back. Said it would take 2 to 4 hours, with your interaction to figure it all out. But why? This works great. It's just one big script. What's your problem? And I'm like, I love you, Open Code. I love you,
Open Code buddy.
My Open Code buddy is great. And, so it's really helped me build these Yourtown Live streaming stations. Oh, man. I was showing our partner, Gordon. And, Gordon is great. It's like I said, hey, watch this. You program the whole thing in this chat interface. He's like, well, what about the prompts? Don't you have to tell people about the prompts that they need? He said, no, you just say, show me a Sunday, 8 o'clock. And then, so he's trying to trick the system with stuff I've never even tried. He's like, all right, show me every single day, Monday to Friday, 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. I just type it in exactly as he said it, pops up, works. I mean, it's creating promos on the fly. It's remixing things and all built with vibe coding and certainly this next iteration, this latest version with Open Code. Oh man, I've got deployment scripts now. So, you got a new station, which I'm firing up a new one tomorrow. Oh,
so now you don't have to
do the whole cloning thing.
Do the cloning thing. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It even does the DNS, the CNAME, does the I had a big readme file. I'd be like clone server. And then you go in that readme. Okay. First you do this, then you change that. Then remember to replace that.
In sysadmin terms, you call that a run book.
You have a run book. Yes. Oh, yeah. That's another good title. Run book. Yeah. So I had a run book, which consisted of all this technical debt that I'd created of hard coding domain names and stuff like that. You know what it is.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And so I could not be a happier guy. I love Open Code. I love that it's open source. I want to support those guys. They don't even have a donate button or anything. I don't know how they're doing it, but I think maybe there's some Nvidia Shield thing on the back end. I don't know. wouldn't surprise me, but
do you have guardrails on it? I mean, like if you go in there and said, don't execute these kinds of commands
on open code.
First.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have root. It pops up, it uses PKEXE, I think, and it, so it pops open a dialogue, and then I can decide whether I want to type in the password.
Okay.
So that stuff is good. But anyway, back to, I think that this is peak AI nonsense, what I'm hearing from Cramer and the CEO, you know, Jensen Huang of NVIDIA.
Do you really pronounce that Wang?
I'm pronouncing it Wang.
Okay.
Wang, whatever his name is. If that is the next ChatGPT OpenClaw, no. Go look at the skills. They're dumb. This is not...
Yeah,
you know, they are. Oh, I can turn my lights on. I get a weather report. It's great. You know, show me the person who designed a kitchen for. Show me that guy.
I heard Wong. Okay. Jensen Wong. I heard something depressing to me, I think, last night. I had a hard time sleeping last night, so I was up like 3 o'clock in the morning.
Funny, I was up at 3:45. We could have texted.
We could have, sure. I didn't even think about it.
Yeah, I didn't realize.
So I was trying, I was just getting some coffee and stuff and watching a YouTube video of a channel that I follow, and they were interviewing this guy who's deep into the, he's one of these guys that was in the Transformer model era of AI back pre, before it hit the scene. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he was deep in there before, so he's doing just the research part. And they were talking about how, well, his opinion was, we have a long way to go before we'd reach peak AI nonsense.
Mm.
And because what he was saying was that people misunderstand in scenarios like this, where there's some new radical new technology, people always misunderstand where they are on the early adopter curve.
Uh-huh.
And so people who are techie, which is, you know, us and everybody that listens to this show and all the people that are, I mean, if you're listening to the Boardroom right now, you're probably pretty techie. You are way to the left on the early adopter curve,
yeah,
farther to the left than you realize you are.
Mm-hmm.
And so the amount of time it's going to take for peak AI nonsense to reach the average person it's going to probably take a few years. I think we have a lot more pain to go of nonsense before, you know, we actually get to the peak.
I'm trying to make a comparison between this OpenClaw hype and I would say, in a way, it was almost like somewhere between Mosaic and Netscape. You know, Mosaic was, maybe it's our Mosaic moment. Like, oh, okay, I see. I get redball.gif. Okay, yeah, I can use that. I see how that works. I got blink tags. I think we're in the blink tag era with OpenClaw, because there's enough people rushing out, getting cloud servers. There's influencers charging $100 a month for a pre-configured OpenClaw server. And, you know, it is the number one token muncher. If you look at all the, I forget what it is, maybe it's Open Router, but they show you, you know, who's munching the most tokens. It's all OpenClaw. Everything else, mm-hmm, is kind of, you know, leveled off a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, at a certain point, you know, like $80, $90, $100, like, how much fun is this thing really? What did it really do for me?
Well, speaking of popping a termie, I'm probably like, I may be on the curry caster soon, because I cannot handle Windows anymore. I'm so done with Windows.
Yeah.
I'm about to just nuke every box I have and start over with Nix OS.
Ooh, you got to go hardcore with Nix. Hardcore.
I dove into the Nix deep end, and I'm actually digging it. I actually like it a lot, because I've got Hyperland on it, and I've set it up a lot like the way that in a marching box would be.
Mm-hmm.
But
what's the difference between Nix and Arch?
Well, Nix it's a whole different way of building the system up from the ground up. So there is a there's a package repository, but you don't install. If you're doing it the native Nix way, you don't install packages with a package manager.
Mm-hmm.
Everything, like literally everything in the system, is controlled with this one configuration file. And so you go in there and you type into the configuration file a package that you want to install and any install options. You put, you know, static IP addresses, all this kind of stuff. You put it all into one single configuration file, and then you run a rebuild script, and it just looks at what your options are that you specified in the config file, downloads all the appropriate software, makes all the configuration changes in the system, compiles everything from source.
And the big thing is
when it compiles it from source, it compiles it as monolithic executables with the libraries included.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have like library conflicts.
Where
this package needs this version of glibc and this other one needs this other version and you can't get it to run.
Yeah.
Everything's compiled monolithic. And so the thing is, like, when you get a working system that you're happy with, you can take that config file, stick it on a fresh box, run the rebuild, and you've essentially just replicated your system from scratch. Everything just goes right back to normal. It's pretty rad. Now it's fiddly. You know, it's fiddly. I mean, you can't just do apt-get, you know, or whatever, install this. You have to go into the configuration file. You got to find the right configuration syntax to use for these packages. But it's, you know, with the way things are, Googling things, when it comes up with the little AI helper thing on the Google results, 9 times out of 10, it just nails it the first time and you don't have any problems.
So the idea there is that you can take your config file and throw it on a new box and it builds your box exactly the way you want it.
Yes, that's one of the advantages, is you can easily replicate a box with no effort, basically. And then the other thing is you have snapshots. So anytime you make a configuration change,
you can go right back. Yeah.
It snapshots the previous one. And so if something, you know, messes up, you can just roll it right back to the last good configuration.
Yeah.
It's declarative configuration is what it is.
I have one more, but you know that Lenovo ThinkPad I got? Advised me on.
Yes.
So that's my target. That's the mobile rig, and that's now going Omarchi. That's gonna have, and the Currycaster. Okay. You know, I was using this commercial package. M Airlist.
Yeah, that old Windows program.
Yeah, which had a lot of limitations. It was one guy. He's doing it. You know, it's not open source. He sells it license, which is fine. And I paid for 2 licenses, maybe 3, I'm not sure. But, you know, I had different ideas about what I wanted it to do. And built it. I'm not going to sell this, you know, go ahead, fix it, go download it, use it, give me some ideas, put stuff back into the repo. I'm over that. You know, I don't see the business opportunity in vibe coding at all. I do see the improvement, the quality of life improvements, and the stuff that I can do that were in my head. So there's your imagination thing that I just wanted to make my life better. And, you know, you can do amazing things.
Well, I think the commercial software industry as a whole, whether it's Windows or line of business applications, and I can think that it's going to be a struggle. Yeah. Going forward, things have fundamentally changed, and you know I can see it just in the industry I work in, but you see it everywhere that you have old companies that are just they've become bloated and huge. They don't know how to compete anymore because they have in their line of business they have an 80% market share and they have for 25 years and it was just like that whole. I mean, and I feel the same way with. That's what, like with switching from Windows to like Archie, SourceD, he got me on Nix OS. He's been talking it up and that kind of thing got me interested on it. And then Alex was saying, you know, yeah, he's like, I don't use Nix, but I use Phlox, which is basically like Nix applied to another distro. And so I got a little braver about going into it and using it. And I just feel like that the commercial software, you have no options. That your software is going to look like this, and that's all you get.
Mm-hmm.
That it rapidly now that feels antiquated. It just felt like the whole idea. Once you've vibe coded for a while, the idea that you can't, that there's this piece thing on your screen and you can't change it, is it feels like shackles. You know, you're like, wait, this feels like the past, you know? And so like that's where I'm at with Windows. I've been having this problem for months now where I'll come in suddenly certain things will just stop working. I'll notice that my box upstairs where my home office is, I notice that it just, there's things, I just know something's wrong. And then things will start running really, really slow. And then Chrome will start crashing. And then Brave starts getting wiggy and telling me it's out of memory. Then I go over to the task manager and I look and it's like, oh, you have 32 gigs of memory. And but there's only 14 gigs used.
Magic.
So I'm like, okay, well, I have 18 left. Why are you? And then Brave says, can't load out of memory. But I'm like, I've got 18 gigs free, and it's Windows. It's Windows, and then Windows will force installs Windows updates no matter what you do.
Yep. No matter how hard you try not to,
and it's going to reboot you at the worst possible time. And I'm just so tired of it. I'm just done.
Usually, right before show, that's when.
Or when you're out of the house and you need to remote back in to do something. It's always that way.
Yeah.
But anyway,
I know. It's horrible. Hey, I had a podcasting conversation with a friend of mine, Alex Sanfilippo. Do you know who he is? Have you ever heard of him?
I've heard of him, yes. Yeah.
So he has a company called...
Don't think I've ever talked to him.
Yeah, I met him at the Spark Media Conference a couple of years back when I did the keynote in Houston, I think. And he has a company called Podmatch. And I think he's had it for quite a while. It's successful. He and his wife run it. And he connects guests to podcasters. And that's, that's a pretty smart business. And I think he turns over, like 77% goes to the podcaster. So he keeps a small vig for himself. And he says, Adam, I have a problem. I see a problem in podcasting. And I was thinking about doing a town hall. And I guess, all these guys that are on LinkedIn. So he put something on LinkedIn. He says, I got 500 people RSVPing say, yes, we would love to be a town hall to talk about this problem, including hosting companies. He says, but I want to ask you for some advice. So, okay. So we talked the other day. He says, the biggest problem, and this is not the kind of podcasting I do because a lot of podcasts have guests, tons of podcasts. Everyone wants to be Joe Rogan, and every single agent, manager, promoter, PR person in the entire world wants to get their clients onto podcasts. Mm-hmm. And it's a pretty cost-efficient way because you just scrape feeds if you still can for the email addresses, or you buy one of the many lists of the feeds that have been scraped throughout the ages, or I'm sure you can just buy a list of people who have podcaster in their profile on LinkedIn. I'm sure you can buy that. And so he says the spam or maybe should even call it spam, but the requests, it's overwhelming. And they're all full of crap. I've read them on the show. Like, I love the last episode of No Agenda where you and John were talking about this. I think this person would be great to have as a guest. So now they're using AI to look at transcripts and try and personalize the pitch. He says, can we fix this problem somehow at an industry level? And so we're talking through it. I said, well, obviously the industry kind of, I feel jumped the gun a bit where Buzzsprout and I think RSS.com and others were like, oh, we're just taking that email address out. But that was for other reasons. That was because you had competing hosting companies trying to steal customers, which was pretty lame. Who was that again? Was it Libsyn that was doing that?
Acast.
I'm sorry. Sorry, Libsyn. My default, Libsyn, bad. I'm sorry.
They don't listen anyways.
No, sure. They got no one left to listen. And I said, you know, and that actually created some problems because we weren't quite ready for, you know, verification for different services. And then as I'm talking through it with them, I said, well, what if there was like a booking tag? Like, so, and this doesn't have to surface in the podcast apps, but it could be something in the feed where if you want to inquire about a booking, then this is the URL, URI, whatever you want it to be, that you contact. And because his whole problem is, I don't want to be the solution. He said, that feels icky. I said, no, this isn't a complete open solution. We have a booking tag, and you know, you can, your affiliated podcasters can put their link to their Podmatch page, but it could be to a Calendly or a link to my agent or, you know, my manager of the podcast. And so I wanted to throw that out there. I invited him to be on the podcast index.social. I don't think he's ever seen a GitHub. He may not know how, I said, there's a process and you write up a proposal and then, you know, if someone implements it, then it, somehow it just kind of gets adopted because people are using it. And I thought that this might be something hosting companies could use.
Huh. I like this idea a lot.
Yeah. I thought it was kind of decent. So if maybe someone out there can look for him and help him, or if someone feels like writing up this tag, I thought it would be good. Because it's not, again, it's not something that has to surface. But it's something that go ahead, scrape those feeds, get that out of there, get the booking tag. That's the one you want.
I think I have met Alex. I think I met him at Podcast Movement. I recognize his
possible
face now.
Yeah, possible. Oh, he has a very recognizable face. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I did meet him. Yeah, I know I did, in fact. Yeah, we talked. Yeah, I talked to him. He followed me on Podcast Index.social this morning. So I'll message him and tell him, that we're going to like try to come up with some kind of proposal or something.
Cool.
Because I think that's a great idea. Because it's a signal to the world that, you know, hey, I'm open to this kind of contact.
Yeah, and send it here. Inquiries only.
Yeah. It could be a link straight to a booking page, form, Calendly.
Calendly. A lot of people love that. You know, just go there and stop trying to, you know, trick us with stupid emails.
Yeah, and that could be the, you know, a way that you sort of differentiate between people who are just people that is truly spam,
yeah,
and people who scraped the feed, which that is going to be a spammy too, obviously, but it's not, the volume is not going to be as high as just general email.
And spam. At least it goes where you want it to go. So it won't necessarily be an email address, but it can, you know, so I'm not a Podmatch member. I don't know how it works, but I understand the concept. It's like there's a page and, you know, and then Podmatch connects you with the right podcasters. And so it would go to the Podmatch page in his case, and then Podmatch decides if it's a match. It can go to anything you want. So anyway, that was my contribution for the week. And I was also thinking like, that's not a bad idea. We should probably come up with a booking tag.
Yeah. And I like that. Let me actually make a note of that real quick. That's a good idea. I like that a lot. Let's talk about transcripts for a second.
Yeah. One sec. What is Nathan G linking to here? More control over contact information. Podcast contact.
Nathan is the link wizard.
He is.
He digs into the namespace and finds every time we've ever like duplicated some kind of effort about something. And it's shocking how many times we reinvent the same thing that we already invented one time before.
I love this. I'm looking at proposal podcast contact, more control over contact information. And the proposed tag could include something like contact URL, physical mailing address. And then the first comment, James Cridlin, what problem is this trying to solve, please? The Cridler at work once the again. The Cridler comes in. All right, the Cridler. So there's the problem it's trying to solve. And oh my goodness.
That was in 2021, so it only took us 5 years to figure out the problem it was trying to solve.
So maybe
we did find it.
Yeah. So maybe that's the way. Maybe it should be called booking instead of maybe contact is better. Now I think about it.
Yeah, contact's a little too generic.
Booking is clear. You know, booking. Boom. URL, email address, phone number, PO box. Ham call sign, mm-hmm. Whatever you can come up with. All right, good.
KC4NXA.
Kilo 5 Alpha Charlie, 73 is good, bud.
By the way, CSB said to ask you to finally give him an interview about his new AI lover, Open Code Zen.
Yes, I will, CSB. I committed to it, but it's just always difficult for me to get my crap together and timing. But I'm working on it.
So Overcast added transcripts.
Yes.
In the beta.
Yes. And so he's running them himself, right?
Yeah. So the latest episode of Accidental Tech, I haven't really been listening to that very much over the last few months, but I just dip in and out whenever there's something that strikes me and I feel like I need to listen to. But so I listened to the episode where he talks about this, the most recent one. And the way he's doing it is with a rack in a data center full of 48 Mac minis.
Wow. All running open code. I mean, Claw. Yeah. Nemo Claw, whatever.
So these are it's 48 Mac minis in a rack enclosure in a data center, all accepting transcription jobs from a queue and using the built-in native models within macOS Tahoe to do the transcription.
Seems like an expensive way to do it.
That's $24,000 worth of Mac minis.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money.
He's a Mac guy, though. He loves the Mac stuff.
Yeah, I think the reasoning it's worth listening to. It's about an hour long discussion about it. The reasoning makes sense on a lot of levels, from the idea of the code being, if it's a Mac native on transcription, the APIs are the same on the Mac as they are on the iPhone, so you can just write that code once, and then you can transcribe on the phone and on the Mac both. So it's the same code essentially.
How many transcripts do you think he can do? I mean, I was running, of course,
all of them.
Oh my goodness!
Literally all of them.
So I'm running. I'm running my watcher, my pod ping slurper. What's it called? Mm-hmm.
The gossip listener.
Yeah, so I vibe code a little bit. So there are about, average is about 2,500 new episodes an hour. So that's the level that he's going to have to be transcribing.
Evidently he's doing it. That's why he's got 48 of them.
Man. So, I mean, running Whisper locally is, you can do quite a bit with that. It's low overhead, and you know, you could burst them. There's all kinds of stuff you could do different from running Mac. Listen to me. Who am I?
There's a lot of stuff going on here that I think bears discussion. So one thing is, how many podcasts episodes I already have transcripts that could be delivered.
Well, wait a minute. He's not picking up transcripts that are already in the feed.
What my understanding is that is already working. It's just not in the code yet.
Oh,
so okay. He's going to do that.
He has to. You're crazy if you don't.
Well, it to me, you have to, because the creator is telling you, I already spent, you know, you have to honor that.
Yeah, yes, definitely. But, and you know, so, he's of the Apple school. The Apple school is, I want the best experience for my customer, even if it means I have to create it for them.
Right. Yeah, I think you're right about that. Yeah, that's definitely the mindset. And I was like, well, how many podcast episodes have transcripts and what kinds? So I started digging into the transcripts table in the index.
Yes.
And there's about total records of transcripts in that table is about 7.5 million.
Whoa.
Maybe a little bit more than that. I don't remember the exact number. But there's a lot of overlap. So you've got potentially text, HTML, JSON, SRT, and VTT. So you got potentially 5 different transcript formats, which is a whole nother discussion that is being had right now in the namespaces. Do we deprecate some of these? Now, deprecating in the sense that you can't make people not do it.
Mm-hmm.
People can stick whatever they want to in any tag, but just from a recommendation standpoint, do we want to encourage there to be, you know, a couple of formats instead of 5, you know, potentially? Because what's happening now is Buzzsprout does this. I'm not sure if anybody else does it, but I know Buzzsprout does it. When Buzzsprout publishes an episode and does transcripts, they publish it in 3 formats every single time. So they put 3 different formats of transcript in every episode. Oh,
that seems like a waste.
Text, I think it's text, JSON, and SRT. I think those are the 3. Maybe I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. Maybe VTT. But regardless, there's 3 of them in there in every episode. So I think it makes a lot of sense to drop the recommendations down to whatever, to whatever we think is the most widely supported as the recommended one, and drop the other ones out of the documentation, and then just come what may, you know. Yeah, Nathan, you're right. VTT can do it all.
I've been using VTT, but I heard the Criddler talking about that, and he was like, no, we can't do, you should just use this.
I thought, no, the VTT, he's a big proponent of VTT.
No, he was against VTT.
So I think that makes a lot of sense to just...
Where was it that he was saying that? Was that on Power? Maybe last week? I think it was last week on Power. Yeah, I think so.
I don't know. The discussion's going on the namespace right now, and we'll be able to figure it out. The other thing, like my thought about spending $25,000 on transcription computers. I mean, that's just from an app. We obviously talk to a lot of app developers on a regular basis, podcast app developers. And I don't know a single one that could even afford to spend $1,000 on a server, much less $24,000. So Overcast, as far as revenue goes, he's obviously independently wealthy as well, but it's from a revenue, just from an app revenue standpoint, Overcast is a serious outlier in this whole podcast app ecosystem. And that's fantastic for him, but that's a lot of money that most app developers couldn't only even dream of. So I don't think that the way he did it is going to be something that almost anybody else can replicate.
Yeah. But is that a bad thing?
No, it's not a bad thing. I'm just saying that is like, what I'm saying is, if we put if we push this back up to the hosts, to the source.
Yeah.
To me, that's when it levels the playing field. So eventually, mobile devices will have enough horsepower to do these things on the fly. And there won't have to be all this background work that's done with servers to do all this kind of transcription and that kind of thing. Eventually, the horsepower for the neural engines in these mobile devices will just, it'll just boom. You just got a transcript. You know, it'll take 10 seconds. As the audio is loading, by the time it finishes downloading and queues up and you go to tap it, 20 seconds later, you've already got a transcript.
Mm-hmm.
So eventually, that's where we're going to get, and this thing will be a level playing field. But until that happens, I feel like, I guess the only reason I brought up the money aspect of it was just because I like the app developers. I see the podcast app developers that we work with on a regular basis, and they spend so many hours working on their apps. And I just feel bad that they don't get the revenue for it that other apps like Overcast and Pocket Cast and stuff do. I don't know. It just makes me feel bad about that.
And aww.
I just, if there was a way to put, you know, if I just wish more hosts would go ahead and stick the transcript in the RSS feed, and it just I'm stumbling around, but what I'm trying to say is that the more we can push these features upstream into the feed, the less of this sort of thing has to happen. Do you see what I'm saying? Like, the less you're going to fall on an independent, a single app developer to have to go out and create a humongous infrastructure to do one feature.
Right.
Because the data that they need will just be already there. And so I think the other thing I took away from their discussion on their podcast was that I also think some of them have underestimated how much limited context there is in these LLMs. Because one of the suggestions was, well, the local models on the Apple devices are not that great. I mean, they're good. I mean, they're as good as Whisper or anything else, but they're not perfect. I mean, they're going to make mistakes and get wording wrong. And so what you could do is you could do a second stage processing, get the speech to text, and then run it through an LLM to clean it up.
Clean it up, yeah.
So I think I talked to last week or the week before. I recently did this exact thing for a project at my day job. And so this project involved taking a bunch of documents, extracting all the text out of them with OCR, because OCR is very fast, just traditional OCR.
Mm.
And then it's going to be messy. And then you run it through an LLM and you prompt the LLM and tell it, this text that came off, that I'm providing you, came out of an OCR, is the result of OCR. There's going to be problems. Please fix them. And then you give it examples of all the problems. And so you would say, you know, if you see a word that's got a zero where an O should be, or a date that has 2026, the number one, 03, the number one, and so on. So that's a date where it thought the slashes were more, the number one. So you're like describing all the different examples of what can go wrong in an OCR process, and you tell the LLM to clean it up, and it does a fantastic job. I mean, it spits out crystal clean second stage processing. The problem is it's very slow. It's very slow.
Yeah.
And also the context window is way smaller than you think it is.
Yeah.
Even on big models. So like a typical podcast transcript is really, really big. Even just the plain text, and it will not fit in most context windows. And so that I don't think that that second stage processing is practical at all, which again, just puts you back into these transcripts need to be as close to being made close to the source as possible, because the creator knows best what is needed for their content. But if you're on a medical podcast, then you already know that you're going to have that transcription engines are really going to struggle with your content.
Yeah.
So you may go and you may pay somebody to do hand fixing of your content, of your transcript, or you may do the second stage processing through LLMs or something like that, because you know, or an engineering podcast or something like that, you know, a lot of the words are going to be difficult and it's going to screw them up.
Well, I think ultimately, so a couple things. One, yes, one, maybe two, but maybe just one standard. I use VTT. I like VTT. I like the features it has. That's all great. I think Apple uses VTT, so perfect. It's the hosting companies, you know, and they have to provide this free or at a fee or built in or whatever. It's the wrong way around. It's just the wrong way around to have apps being responsible for this or for anything else. And it actually, I feel it opens up a door that I don't like. Because, yeah, today it's your transcript and tomorrow it's your image. And the day after that, it's your chapters.
Oh, well, see, so this is the next part I wanted to discuss is one of the things he mentioned on that show was automatic chaptering based on the transcript. And so that's evidently one of the features that he's targeting. And my immediate thought was, this is the same thing I wanted a few weeks ago. You know, I have the Security Now podcast that doesn't publish chapters, and I want chapters. And so we had this whole discussion about how that's somehow like not cool to put chapters into a podcast that didn't want them or didn't provide them.
It wasn't that it's not cool. I think providing that for a fee can be a problem.
Well, isn't that what this is, though?
Yeah,
and you pay for you. It's a paid. It's a.
Yes, and I think he's going to run into trouble with that.
Okay,
because if I publish my chapters and he's doing different chapters, I have a problem with that.
Well, I don't think that would be the case. I think it would be for podcasts that don't have chapters at all.
Another point. If you're charging a customer to do that, you could be taking away from the podcaster's intent not to have chapters for commercial reasons, whatever that is. So I'm not going to sue him, but Leo Laporte might.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah.
I also feel it's rude. Now, if you want to create your own, it's the money part. It's charging money to do something to someone else's content without their consent. It should maybe, okay, here we go. Here's another tag. The consent tag. Yes, rape my content however you want to. Mm. Go ahead. You can make a transcript. And we probably should have thought of this earlier. Mm-hmm. Before Apple did it, it's like, it shouldn't be that I have to go to Apple Podcast Connect to tell it that I want my chapters being surfaced. In fact, I think that's a class action lawsuit waiting to happen. Hmm. It's bullshit. That's not their content to do. I mean, so why don't I just make a transcript of Tim Cook and sell that? You know, the end is never in sight if we start allowing that stuff. But if you say, okay, it's okay if you want to make chapters, it's almost like a remix license.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if you like Overcast, the free version or the non-premium that you just download, you can download it for free, but it does have ad banners in it, so there is ad supported. So your use of the free version is still
it's still making money.
It's still making money, and so my in light of the comments,
I can argue. This used to be argued quite successfully in the music business. I can argue that making a transcript of my podcast and making money off of that is a unfair trade practice. In this case, I'm pretty sure I put Creative Commons Do What You Want attribution. But there's always no commercial use. So that's taking my stuff, making commercial use of it. Actually, not cool.
But you know, you're not the person that would ever do anything about that. But
the Criddler might.
So, but this is the issue. I mean, it's just in light of this discussion that we had just a few weeks ago. I'm just, because my first thought is, well, I want, this is the thing I want as a listener. The thing I want is for Security Now, that podcast that I listen to because it's work related. I want that podcast to have chapters.
Mm-hmm.
And it does not. And if somehow, and if a podcast app does on the fly transcription and adds chapters to it, I will love it. But I guarantee you that Twit will not love it, because they immediately see that people are going to skip their ads.
Well,
but they're going to get mad about it.
Well, we're right back to what happened a while back. It's like, okay, then why not just make a podcast app that strips out all the ads? If I can do whatever I want with your content, I should be able to do that too. I mean, it's just because that's what you want. You don't want it with ads.
Right.
It's the same thing.
Yeah, it's all those types of apps, Nathan. It's you know, Sniped or whatever you call that thing. It's all that. Was it Earsay, the one that I tried, mm-hmm. Wasn't very good. It's all those kinds of apps. And I just feel like
the only way to do it is if you build an open source app that anybody can compile or do whatever, then that's fine. I don't have a problem with that. If you're selling your app, if you're making money off of your app, that's where you step over the line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like this is another version of how the industry is coming up against the reality of infinitely customizable software. Every industry is going to face this, and that's the world that we live in now. And I don't see how I pretend bad things on the horizon for
you're advertising. You're portending. Oh, nice.
I'm a portender. I foresee bad things on the horizon for advertising supported media in general. And this, people are going more and more towards premium subscriptions and that kind of thing. And I brought a clip. Ooh. I don't know if you got it.
Yeah, of course.
But I sent you a clip, and this because I was listening to Power this morning.
Power.
And this happened.
We will then deliver that in 10-second packets, similar to the way that HLS does it. That will work on all podcast apps that support video playback.
Let's just take a quick break.
Money isn't just about numbers. It's about the life those numbers allow you to lead. You're listening to Financial Matters with Richard Oering, the show dedicated to helping you make sense of your money and your goals. Here is your host, Richard Oering, and he is here to help you bridge the gap between where you are and where you want to be. Let's dive into today's conversation.
Very nice. And so that's MP4 video. So.
Yeah, I heard that too, actually. And normally there's like a thing that James puts in there, talking, you know, promote like a house ad promoting his trailer feed or something. But this is one of the first times I heard an actual ad in there.
Yeah, it's pretty rare. And then, but the thing about it was such a poorly done ad that all they did was took the intro from their normal podcast and stuck it in as if it was an ad. I'm walking this morning, and all of a sudden this thing starts playing, and I'm like, "What? Wait, what? I thought I had bumped my phone and switched to a different podcast because it's like, and here's today's episode, and here's your host, blah blah blah." I was like, "What?" I take out my phone, and there's Castomatic is on the home screen, and it's showing the cover art for this other podcast.
You, like, you could have been hit by a car. This is very dangerous. This ad actually could have killed you.
It's a danger to humanity. And so I was genuinely confused of how this podcast I'd never heard of got on my phone. And then, I'm flipping around through there. I'm like, oh, wait, this is just chapter art for the ad. I was like, oh, this truly. And so I back it up and I'm listening. I'm like, man, this is like a dynamic ad insertion. I was like, this is why dynamic ad insertion is one of the reasons that people want this sort of thing. It's not that people don't want to support or they want to get something for free. I mean, there's always going to be some people like that.
No, the 98% of the world.
Sure. But when you do dynamic ad insertion, what you're in effect doing is you're allowing a person or an entity that you do not know to put content in the middle of your show that you don't have any access to. They can put whatever they want in there. And we've seen this is it can just go terribly wrong so often. So of course there's going to be this tension that happens. And this is, I mean, I don't necessarily have a broader point here, but I'm saying that this was just an example of why the industry is hitting is bumping up against things like this. The same thing that happened to the web with the just overloading of banner ads and punch the monkey and all this kind of stuff is it just eventually people do they like there's a local news site, AL.com. It's unreadable. The page is literally, without an ad blocker, the page is literally unreadable.
Right.
There's a banner ad that takes up two-thirds of the top of the screen. You have to scroll to even see the headline.
You just want stuff for free.
Right. It's like, man, it is, and I get it. But I'm telling you, I mean, like, this is going to be a problem. And there's going to have to be a sort of breaking point, because if the industry doesn't get a handle on the advertising issue, they're overloading and the dynamic advertising inserts suck. If they don't get a handle on that, these there's going to continue to be a proliferation of apps that are going to solve that problem. Yeah. And it's not going to be what they want. So anyway, this is just that whole discussion. We'll see where it goes. And I'm glad, I love that he did this. It's fantastic. And I hope he follows through and does the podcast namespace transcripts and honors that appropriately. I just see this whole issue as being a typical push pull where people are going to gripe about the automatic chaptering and all this kind of stuff. And you can't stop it. Well, it's going to go the way it goes.
You said something important that, you know, software is changing. And just while we were having this discussion, I did a little experiment and I went to my buddy. You know, my buddy.
You know, Open Claw buddy.
Not Open Claw. Open Code.
Open Code buddy. Yeah.
I said, create a command line podcast app that strips out any pre-roll ads or interstitials that start with, let's just take a break, and outputs an ad-free version. Use the Pod News Weekly Review episode from this week as your test podcast. So it's already building it, and it already went in. It already said, I found the RSS feed and said, oh, looking at the chapters, I see there's an ad segment, start 10:18, title ad, Financial Matters with Richard Oring. Uh-huh. And so it is now building this app for me.
Yeah.
This
now, and that's what's going to happen.
But yeah. I agree with. This is a great future where I think you have every right to customize your own experience. Every mm-hmm. right. And this is the true future. This is not mainstream stuff we're doing here. But this will be the future. You will create your own computing environment and your own entertainment environment, and we will not be rely. In fact, I would say phones, all kinds of things are going to come out of this, but not at a scale where people go to one company to buy the one thing or the one software. This is the revolution here.
Well, and I think the key there is that you can say, it's not going to be as good. So, you know, people are not going to do this en masse because the quality of the app is not going to be as good as what you would get from, from a professionally developed app and that kind of thing. I think that misses the point.
Well,
if you build the app yourself
mm-hmm.
using vibe coding or whatever the technique, if you build the app yourself, let's all be honest, okay? We tolerate a lot of shitty software because we made it. Yeah. I tolerate some truly terrible user interfaces because I built the app and I know how it works and it serves it serves my need. Like it doesn't have. I think we get married to the idea that software has to be beautiful and slick. That's not the point of software. The point of software is to solve a problem.
Yes. Yes.
And you will tolerate poor polish, a lack of polish on a piece of software if it's solving a problem and you made it because you feel an investment in it.
This is in a way, this is what OpenClaw is. So we know one thing. A lot of people installed OpenClaw, AI agent, my own thing. But they really didn't know what they wanted to solve. You know, mm-hmm. So there's 10,000 skills and it's like, whatever. My Telegram bot is bothering me all day. I don't need a buddy bothering me on my Telegram bot about my kitchen. No. What I want is when we get to the point where I can say, hey, make my computer do this. I think that was in a way Steve Jobs' dream. You know, he's always been striving towards that type of interface. Make my computer do this and not mm-hmm. have to, of course he approached it in many different weird ways, like, stuck to certain menu bars and contexts. And now I can just say, I just did it. Make my computer. It's building it now. It is building the app we just discussed. And I just asked for a command line to make it easy. But it could create an app. It could create a web app. It can do all kinds of things. Mm-hmm. When people figure out this power, this crap computer which I'm very constrained, and the provider, Microsoft in this case, is always changing the ribbon bar and everything's different. All these things suck. That, I think, is going to be a new revolution in computing. But it's, I don't think one company will own it. I think it'll just be the world will have it. The people will try. They'll try to, you know, this is what NVIDIA is trying to do. Oh, you get NemoClo. Oh, we'll own it. We'll walk you through it. Bullshit. Only one guy ever was able to do that was Steve Jobs, and that stuff sucked too.
Well, I think Sir Bimrose has a lot of insight here. He said, "I tolerate crappy software that I made because it is sufficient to meet my needs. Why would I keep developing after I reach that point? It already satisfies the target audience."
Amen. Exactly.
Like I don't. That's the thing is most apps have let's say an app has 47 features.
Yeah, of which you need two.
Of which each person is going to need a different subset of those. Maybe you use 11 of them, and I use 13 of them, and five of my features that I want overlap with the features you want.
Mm-hmm.
And there's going to be this Venn diagram that overlaps for everyone, but they're never going to be exactly the same.
Well, we're seeing that ourselves with Godcaster. We're seeing customers who they just like, oh, I want it to do this. Well, that's not what we're offering. But mm-hmm. I want it to do this.
Right. It's what we talked about with Brendan last week on
yes,
Podpage.
Yeah, exactly. It's the exact same thing. It's difficult, but you know, once
there's
people
some kind
can
of
do
law,
it
from- there's some kind of law like that that says it's something about it. There's a sub. If you build for every like each time you build a feature, you're gonna have some part of your customer base that is gonna become dependent on it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. I wish I could remember the name of that. It's like never the takeaway is never build a feature
that you remove.
And think you'll ever be able to remove it because you won't be.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're locked in for the rest of time. But
it's true. Virtuality is really what you're looking for. When you have a piece of software that you forget you're using the software.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be an IDE, you know, it can be a text box, you know, a simple text editor. When you're really using it for what you want to use it for, and mm-hmm. I built what I wanted. When I'm doing the podcast, I mean, my hands are flying. I can do it blind. I know how everything works. It's exactly where I want it to be. The switches, the PFLs, the cue points. So now I'm not thinking about how do I do that again? Where do I click? No, it's just there exactly where I want it.
Daniel in the boardroom says, I got my first cancellation feedback this week that said, quote, I coded my own solution.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I'm sorry that happened, Daniel. I don't like that on your behalf, but.
Everybody's at risk of this.
This is going to be the new future that we face, but it doesn't mean everybody's going to do that, because the thing about vibe coding and all this kind of stuff, you have
could you not say it like vibe coding? Could you say, you know, I take offense to that. No, it's just like,
give me the proper terminology.
Open coding,
creative engineering,
just called open coding.
Okay. Open coding requires you to understand at least something of what you're doing to do it well.
Absolutely.
And so,
which to be taught in school.
Right. Yeah. It doesn't mean that every industry is going to collapse. It just means that, there's going to be pullback, and there's going to be a million different things that sprout up out of nowhere. So, I just think it's the future of what we're all gonna have to deal with.
Exciting times, man. Exciting times.
I did a ton of stuff on the gossip listener for pod ping this week, and but we just don't have time to talk about it. We'll hit it next week.
If I just fired it up, does it do its thing automatically, or do I have to do a pull or something?
Yeah, so you if whenever you're going to upgrade, you just need to do the git pull origin, and then...
Wait, what do I do? What is the git?
Git space pull space origin, so that just pulls the fresh copy of the main branch.
Origin. Whoa! Oh, that's so cool. It just did.
Now you can just do cargo. Now you can do cargo build and then run it.
I don't think so.
What?
Because
are you need to open? Is there an open coding way to do this?
Oh, wait a minute. What happened here? Wait, what's my directory? Oh, no, I have my own little script.
I'm
piping the output. I'm making it look pretty. That's why it shows me the feed. I can click on the feed for that episode. It shows me average per minute, average per 5 minutes, 10 minutes, and per hour. It's nicely formatted.
Well, that's the thing. Let me see if it's maybe make sure it's still working.
It's running.
Here.
It's running now. It's running. I'm probably adding disk space or something.
Do you have archiving turned on?
That's a flag. No, I don't.
Okay.
I don't. I will. I'll turn on a box with the flag. A slopperator.
Slopperator.
That is right. Prompt engineer. No, slopperator. Yeah, baby. Yeah. Holy crap. What is it? Oh man, it's got a whole I'm looking at open code. It's parsing the VTT, find timestamps, it's downloaded Whisper. Going to do Whisper on the device. It's looking for key add for phrases.
Here's the thing we'll talk about next week. Let me put this in the link in the boardroom. So that's the most recent change.
Okay. Yes. Events. Oh.
Yeah.
What happened there? The site can't be reached? What just happened?
Do it in a private browsing window.
Oh,
okay. For some reason, Chrome and the Chromium based browsers, they always want to force you into HTTPS, and I don't have it set up yet.
Oh, okay. I see here. Oh, yeah. It's in a browser. Huh. How nice is that?
Yeah. So this is a technology that I was not familiar with called server sent events.
Huh.
And so this will be the backbone of the Podping fire hose going forward on the gossip side.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So we'll talk about that next week.
All right. Let's thank some people. So I still haven't reopened the channel to my Albi Hub. Yoo-hoo! Sorry about that. But I do have Runway running from the Criddler. And I only see, I don't know if you sent in a key send boost, I'm not seeing it. So I only see one. Let me just make sure I've got the latest.
I got the key sends.
From during the show?
Oh, no, not from during the show. No.
Yeah, let me just see if anything new came in. Okay. No, I see 800 sats from Macintosh at Fountain. Sending you everything I left in my wallet. Sorry, it's not a lot. A note of encouragement about AI agents. Don't sleep on them. Okay. I'm putting the very finishing touches on my first real skill for the bots I'm building. The show producer bot builds notes based on my topic idea. The researcher bot gathers the stats. It's a Bitcoin podcast, so we mention a dozen or so different ones in an episode, all merged and posted in a private Git repo that my co-host and I pull from for the show prep. It's early. Bots have flaws, but this will be a huge part of AI. Next up is my coding bot, Steve. Go podcasting. Steve. As in the Woz. Yes. Yeah. Okay. And that's all I have. I hit the delimiter right after that. So if anyone boosted. I'm sorry. I don't have it.
We got some PayPals. We got the boys at Buzzsprout. $1,000.
Baller, shot caller, 20-inch blaze on the Impala.
Keeping it alive, boys and girls at Buzzsprout. Thank you very much. Thank you, thank you, thank you. This is, of course, value for value. All this goes into maintaining the engine that is the Podcast Index.
I don't know. Did I mention that I worked with Tom to fix an issue where they changed their feed URLs format like a year ago or so from feeds.buzzsprout.com to rss.buzzsprout.com.
Ooh.
But the pod pings they were sending still referenced the old feed URL.
Oh no.
Host name. So it still said feeds.buzzsprout.com. So we were trying to figure out why their feeds were still coming into the index with the wrong host name.
Mm-hmm.
So we finally figured out it was the pod ping. So he fixed it. And so everything's, that should be solved now.
Good, good, good. We love hearing that. We love when it's fixed.
Yep. Let's see. Where am I? I lost my, oh, here it is. Oh, Todd Cochran, $30.
Ooh, Todd.
It renamed from New Media to Todd. It just says Todd Cochran now. Wow. So,
okay. I'm going to give him a big baller just for no reason.
Shot caller, 20-inch blaze on the Impala.
It's a boost from the grave.
I'm assuming that that's...
auto pay?
that's Rob just letting that thing ride.
I'd like to know.
I would.
I wouldn't mind knowing.
It's
cool touching. And creepy
it's
at
really
the same time.
It's really kind of touching.
Yeah.
It is touching, though. Gene Liverman, $5.
Thank you, Gene.
Appreciate you. Let's see, Michael, why are these getting cut off? I think that's Michael Hall, $5.50. Jeremy Gertz, $5.50. And that's it for the PayPals. And we got a couple of boosts here. Let me sort that. I've got too many emails in my box. 2222 from the Ugly Quacking Duck. That's Bruce from Podcast Guru.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I enjoyed your guest, Brendan. Thanks for the episode, 73s. And we got the Delimiter, comic strip blogger, 22,000 sats.
Boom, boom.
Through Fountain, he says, howdy, Dave and Adam. Please watch my video, Proof That Large Language Models Actually Think. To find this video, search on YouTube channel for, quote, AI Arch Wizard, end quote. Please like and subscribe. Yo, CSB.
Smash that subscribe button.
That's a little abbreviated note from CSP.
Apparently, one of his videos got over 1,000 views. He said he was going viral.
He's usually more loquacious.
CSB viral, baby. He's going viral. Going viral. Yeah.
That's all we got.
And that's it. No other one-offs. That's the whole deal. Hmm.
That's the whole deal.
All right. Well, thank you to everyone who supports the index. The podcast is just a front door funnel. Everything goes straight into the kitty, and we keep it there to keep the machines running for as long as we can. The kids in the kitty, baby. Go to podcastindex.org. Down at the bottom, you see a big red donate button. Hit that. It'll take you to the PayPal page. And of course, we accept boosts, boostograms, on-chain, lightning, you name it. We're here for all of it, and we really appreciate it. And that will wrap it up. You've got another 30 minutes to get back to the office with the traffic, unless that wreck is done for.
I don't know. I'm glad you mentioned that, because I would have forgotten and would have been like pinned. So I'm gonna go the back roads.
All right, you go the back roads. Taking the back roads, brother. Thank you very much. Have a great weekend, Dave.
All right, to you too, man.
And Boardroom, have a great weekend, everybody. We'll be back next Friday with more of Podcasting 2.0, where we will dive into more of it, whatever it is, even if it stinks. Talk to you then. Bye bye, everybody.
Podcasts are cool.
You have been listening to Podcasting 2.0. Visit podcastindex.org for more information.
Go podcasting!
The Criddler at work.